I'm Dr. Teresa Sievers. And as I promised you, I was going to be bringing you different modalities of healing.
Teresa Sievers' friends and family describe her as a dynamo.
I don't know about you, but I'm not ready for postmortem. I want to enjoy my life like it is now.
Sievers was a holistic physician, and not everyone agreed with her approach to medicine.
Dr. Sievers had a very strong personality. A lot of people found her polarizing. They loved her or they didn't.
But whatever people thought of her, there seemed to be no explanation for what happened at her home in June of 2015. At the age of 46, Teresa Sievers was found dead in the kitchen of her home in Bonita Springs, Florida, brutally murdered.
911, what is your emergency?
My friend, Teresa Sievers, she's a doctor, and she's dead on the floor.
This week on Killer Cases.
I mean, this was a violent crime that occurred in the midst of an area that didn't see violent crime and on a street that didn't see violent crime. And people were upset. People were worried.
Pure and simple. A tale of murder and salaciousness.
You see that, you know, paradise isn't paradise. And maybe these pieces of the puzzle are starting to add up.
Why? Why is Teresa Sievers dead?
How had anyone gone into this crime scene, committed this horrific crime, and left absolutely no trace evidence?
For the Law and Crime Network and Vault Studios, I'm Brian Ross. This is Killer Cases, the podcast.
This was almost the perfect crime.
Are you ready to drop dead? I'm not.
Teresa Sievers was last seen alive in public at the Fort Myers, Florida airport the night before she was found dead on the floor of her Bonita Springs home.
Because we were able to observe her in the airport on surveillance video, we ended up learning that Dr. Sievers was returning home from a family gathering for her mother's birthday from Connecticut.
Lee County Sheriff's Detective David Levin, who would later be assigned to the case, says her husband Mark and two daughters, Josephine and Carmella, stayed behind in Connecticut.
And Mom came home because Dr. Sievers was the primary breadwinner and she had a practice to run.
But the next day, Dr. Sievers failed to show up at her holistic medical practice.
The employees at her job started texting her husband, Mark Sievers, saying, "Hey, Dr. Sievers isn't here."
Teresa's husband called a next-door neighbor, Dr. Mark Petritis, to check on her.
"Hey, Mark. This is Mark. Teresa's not at work yet. And the office is calling and texting, and we can't get through to Teresa. Maybe she's just sound asleep. It's just not like her. You know, in all the years, I've known her to be a half hour late for work."
Dr. Mark Petritis was the first one who found her.
911, what is your emergency?
I'm at a friend's house. He's out of town, and I came here to check on his wife, and she's dead on the floor.
Oh, sir, hold on. Yeah. Stay on the line.
Yes.
Okay. You're doing very well.
And she's bashed in the back of the head. And she's cold. She's dead cold.
Cynthia Ross with the state attorney's office would later be brought in on the case.
It appeared that nothing had been taken. Did not appear that the house had been ransacked. There was nothing that indicated what the motive might be for what was a very vicious crime.
Lee County Sheriff's Detective Mike Downs was also called in to work on the case, alongside Detective David Levin.
Upon my initial observations that she has sustained significant head trauma, blunt force in nature, and there was a large pool of blood, and she was a smaller female. You could tell that it was not something that happened quickly.
There's no obvious smoking gun, for lack of a better choice of words.
Pretty much everybody's a suspect at that point. Who does her nails? Who does her hair? Who cuts the lawn? Do they have a house cleaner? Have they had any issues with anybody? Does she get along with everybody at work? But nothing really seemed to pan out. We did later find out that she also had a very strong personality, which can rub people the wrong way.
Detective Levitt says there was also speculation that Dr. Sievers had been targeted because she practiced holistic medicine.
Why aren't we doing this kind of medicine for our body? You can have preventive medicine, but it's not the kind of medicine you typically get at your doctor's office.
There was a group of people identify themselves as web sleuths, and they took a very big interest in this case because throughout the country, and at least two to possibly three other states at that time, there were some doctors that also practiced holistic medicine as well as internal medicine that died. And the theory was that they were all murdered and that we had to look at because, like Mike said, right now, It's everybody and their brother.
Michael Braun is a reporter with the News Press newspaper based in Fort Myers, Florida.
Theory of it was that there were certain holistic doctors who were being murdered because they had maybe a cure for cancer or had something that the government or some kind of shadowy group didn't want them to talk about. But that turned out to be not to be the case.
In need of fresh leads, the detectives decided to start interviewing those closest to Teresa, starting with her husband, Mark.
Just for the record, state your name one more time for me.
Mark Seavers.
Again, prosecutor Cynthia Ross.
Anytime there is a brutal murder of a spouse, one tends to look or at least glance at the other spouse. But in this case, the spouse was thousands of miles away in Connecticut at the time that the crime was committed, with an alibi that was absolutely airtight.
I feel pathetic, but at the same time, there's so much going on. But it's hard. I feel that I could have stopped this from happening. How do I get over that?
It'll take time, really well.
Can you tell me when she died? I need to know, was she tortured? Was what happened to her?
We can't tell at this stage. We're still working on that.
She had so much to offer the world. Mm-hmm. She was really, everyone says this about their wife. I should have been home.
Everyone kept describing Mark as her rock, and she was his rock.
Have you ever cheated on your wife?
I've never cheated on her, and she's never cheated on me.
Have you ever had anyone have an unhealthy obsession with either you or your wife or your kids or anything?
I absolutely can't think of anybody that would have been fitting with that at all.
The detectives ended the interview so Mark Seavers could plan Teresa's funeral and grieve with their two little girls.
Yeah, the funeral was befitting somebody of her stature. Here's this lady that really helped everybody, and now she's gone. And they mourned that fact.
The funeral came and went, but seemingly investigators were no closer to figuring out who had been waiting for Teresa that Sunday night as she pulled into her garage after telling her husband she was safely home. But then a late night phone call just a couple of weeks after the murder would lead detectives to a small town in Missouri. It was the turning point in the investigation.
And we catch a break. We get a tip.
The tip came from a family friend of a man in Hillsboro, Missouri, a man by the name of Curtis Wayne Wright. He'd been convicted of multiple felonies in the past. And soon, the detectives were on the trail of a second career criminal, a close friend of Curtis Wayne Wright named Jimmy Ray Rogers.
Jimmy Ray Rogers liked to call himself the Hammer. It was on his Facebook. He liked to refer to himself as the Hammer.
Both men, Jimmy Ray Rogers and Curtis Wayne Wright, were now persons of interest, but they both denied being in Florida at the time of the murder.
And Curtis Wright told us that during the weekend of the murder, first he told us he was homesick in bed, never left his trailer. And then he, at one point, he said, well, I was working on a car all weekend.
And Jimmy was beside himself. He barely talked to us and then just let us know he just doesn't like cops, so I'm not going to talk to you. I didn't go to Florida, and I don't talk to Wayne. He's a nerd. Oh, okay. See you later, Jimmy.
But even with the tip backing up the detectives' gut feeling, there still wasn't anywhere near enough to arrest them. And the detectives returned to Florida deflated.
We had a lot of digital evidence that we found that we knew we had to process and try and piece it together. Most notably, when we did the initial warrant on the Curtis Wainwright residence, there was a vehicle in the driveway, and we found a GPS in the center console. So we were hoping, let's just hope he entered addresses in here. Let's hope it tracked his movement.
And at first, we're deflated again because they're telling us this information is deleted and we can't interpret the code. So they spent a significant amount of time, hundreds and hundreds of man hours, trying to figure out this code to recover this deleted data.
And then, finally, all of that work got them what they needed.
They were able to establish a route from Curtis Wainwright's residence in Hillsboro, Missouri. And he makes a route there to go to Jimmy Rogers' residence in Cadet, Missouri. We went from 0 to 60 in a very short amount of time.
Then, over 1,000 miles south, along Interstate 75, off the exit to Bonita Springs, and then right to Jarvis Road, the home of Dr. Teresa Seavers.
I think it was an aha moment, and I think at that moment,
there is the, wait a minute, we have people saying we're not here, and they are.
Lee County Sheriff Carmine Marcino.
Retrieving that address, which would have been deleted just hours or days later, and placing the killers in the area of our victim was a critical piece of this puzzle.
And the GPS data shows their every movement on the way south.
One of the significant locations was a Walmart, actually right across the street from the sheriff's office here, where we're able to capture what we believe and what is evidently Curtis Wainwright and Jimmy Ray Rogers walking into Walmart, buying a number of suspicious items, lockpick set, garbage bags, cleaning items, things like that. So now we know they're down here. We could see them clear as day on the video.
On the day Dr. Seavers returned home. We couldn't even believe it. The only thing we can think of is that they never thought we'd ever come up there because it's, you know, over 1,000 miles away, that they never would put two and two together.
The detectives hit even more pay dirt when they returned to Missouri and questioned the Hammer's girlfriend, Taylor Schobaker.
And she started crying, and she just said, I know what happened.
And I told him that I knew that he had something to do with it.
Okay.
And then he started asking me questions like, what do I know about? And I'm like, well, I know you went down there to kill somebody. And then he said, yeah. I said, did you shoot her? And he said, no. And I said, then how'd you kill her? And he made a stupid little chuckle that he does, and then said, with a hammer.
He said, with a hammer?
Yeah.
Schomaker says Jimmy Ray Rogers, the man known as the Hammer, had confessed to her while lying in bed.
It's huge because he actually confessed. Jimmy Ray Rogers confessed to the murder and specifically said that they used a hammer, which is consistent with the physical evidence that we recovered from the scene.
And then Taylor Schomaker took Detective Lebed to the area where she said she helped her boyfriend dispose of some of the evidence, including a blue jumpsuit she claimed he wore during the murder.
Case number 15-268513. Time now is currently 6:38 p.m. on Tuesday, August 25th, 2015. All right, Mission Maker, can you just walk me over to where you've identified the overalls?
And then she goes, there it is right there. And sure enough, we get out, we walk up to it, and it's a blue jumpsuit sitting on the side of the road.
How did we come to find these items there?
Back out the window.
Okay, and what was the reason for throwing these out the window?
Because he murdered somebody.
Who's he?
Jimmy Rogers.
They had their evidence and believed they had their killers. But the investigation was far from over. Curtis Wainwright then told the authorities he has information they will want if he can make a deal with them.
So as difficult as it was to us a decision that had to be made, to let Wright plead to second-degree murder and receive a sentence of 25 years, provided he testified truthfully.
Wright's information involved his best friend from high school back in Missouri, Mark Seavers, Teresa Seavers' husband. And now this murder case was turning into a case of murder for hire. Even before his best friend in Missouri implicated Mark Seavers in the murder of his wife, Teresa, Detectives Lebed and Downs were already suspicious of Seavers.
We've met many people through our investigations that have lost a loved one, and he seemed fake.
Mark Seavers was brought in for another round of questioning. But when detectives left the interrogation room, they had a sense Seavers was playing to the cameras.
I know you put this bastard in jail. Okay, she got hit coming in the house.
I saw a lot of simulated behavior. It didn't feel real.
How could you have been hit?
Cynthia Ross, who would later prosecute this case, agreed with the detectives.
It was so much of a what would appear to be so much of a show.
Now, talking about your relationship, have you guys been contemplating any kind of separation or divorce? Has there been any marital problems?
No.
The detectives would later learn from friends and family the couple indeed had both marital and financial problems.
What are some of the biggest motives for anybody to do something they shouldn't? Money's a big one. Infidelity is another. So we have two of those on the board right now.
You can see there's more of a darker side to who he really was and who he wanted to show us.
As he was leaving, he said, I'll do anything I can to cooperate, to assist, to catch this killer.
I want to speak to you every chance I can.
Excellent.
I programmed your number on my phone, so when you call me, I know it's you.
Okay.
And it isn't a week later when he's no longer willing to cooperate.
Well, he had his lawyer contact us and shut off all contact.
He ghosted us. He stopped talking. He stopped cooperating.
But armed with testimony from Curtis Wayne Wright, prosecutors believed they wouldn't need Seaver's cooperation to make their case. And the first test came with the trial of Jimmy Ray Rogers, everything hinging on whether a jury would believe Curtis Wayne Wright and his chilling version of the murder of Teresa Seavers. Teresa Seavers' mother and sister were in the courtroom every day, watching as Assistant State Attorney Hameed Hunter presented the state's case.
Were you able to see where he was hitting her with the hammer?
In the head.
And what happened after she fell on the floor?
He continued to hit her.
He continued to hit her?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes. I physically walked over to the area where he was at and asked him to stop. I mean, put my hand on him.
It didn't take long for the jury to return a verdict.
We have a verdict in the Jimmy Ray Rogers case. Yes, we do have a guilty verdict. We do have a guilty verdict in Jimmy Ray Rogers, but it is of second-degree murder, not a first-degree murder.
Rogers was later sentenced to 25 years in prison. But for prosecutors, there would be no justice unless they could make a case against the man they believe had hired the killers, Mark Seavers.
But for Mark Seavers, there would have been no funeral. There would have been no grieving family. There would have been no children without parents. It was important that all that participated were held accountable.
The evidence against Seavers continued to mount, including his use of so-called burner phones.
Mark Seavers and Curtis Wayne Wright had a secret communication system set up.
Their code word together was switch to other or other. They would almost immediately switch over to these prepaid phones, and we were able to establish a connection.
Wright told the detectives the murder was planned at his wedding in Missouri 2 months earlier.
This is basically where it all, you know, started to come together. Mark suggested two scenarios. One was to shoot her or kill her outside of the medical practice when she was leaving work one night. Curtis explains to him, he says, well, what if she's with somebody when she comes out of the medical practice? And Mark says, well, that'll be better because if somebody else is killed during the offense, then it's likely to keep the suspicion off of me or anybody else. So, and he explained it as collateral damage, which goes to show you the type of person Mark Seavers really is.
When the time came to arrest Mark Seavers, detectives knew from their surveillance exactly where to find him.
So there wasn't really anywhere Mr. Seavers was going to go where we couldn't find him, unless he had a ride into outer space that we didn't know about.
Mark Seavers was home, but there was concern he was armed and might resist taking his daughters hostage. Lee County Sheriff Carmine Marcino.
And then we knew that if he had been watching TV, and he knows, we got him. We knew we had to get Mark Seavers, but most importantly, we had to extract him and save those children.
The job fell to Detective David Levin.
We knew he had many guns in the home, but his behavior was erratic. So that, coupled with the fact that if he knows he's getting arrested for the murder of his wife, he has guns in the home, and there's two little girls present. So we were very worried. So we get to the door. I see the girls' heads kind of perk up and look towards the door. And then I see Mark start to come towards the door, phone's in his hand, and he turns around and starts to walk away. So I said to the deputy who was with me, said, we're giving this another 5 seconds and we're forcing entry. Fortunately, within half that time, he came back, opened the door, and leaned out with his phone in his hand and grabbed him by his wrist. You're under arrest for murdering your wife.
And when Mark arrived, he had a smirk that I'll never forget. It was a smirk. It was a 1,000-mile stare. He was ice cold. You could look at him and see he was ice cold, no blood in his veins, and he knew he was caught.
But the defense was preparing a surprising argument.
If Curtis can't have Mark, nobody can.
Right now, we are going to see opening statements at around...
The trial starts in late 2019, with reporters fascinated by how much Mark Seavers and Curtis Wayne Wright look like each other.
They do look nearly identical.
I can't wait just to see these two former best friends looking at each other in court.
For the record, both assistant state attorneys are present. Mr. Seavers is present, and both defense counsel. State's ready.
Cynthia Ross with the state attorney's office wants to make sure the jury knows the importance of her key witness, Curtis Wayne Wright, but also to make clear he's hardly a model citizen.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury.
We were asking them to believe a killer.
Curtis Wainwright allows us to hear the conversations that occurred between he and Mark Seavers. To hear how Mark Seavers solicited, conspired, and arranged the murder of Teresa Seavers.
Defense attorney Michael Mummert had gotten to know Mark Seavers while representing him during previous custody hearings.
On a very personal level, he's a very nice man. He's kind of goofy, kind of funny. And over the 4 years that I represented Mark, I got to like him. I really do like Mark.
You're going to hear about prepaid phones. You're going to hear about divorce, infidelity, life insurance as a motive. But ultimately, all the evidence of a conspiracy, all the evidence of Mr. Seavers' involvement is going to come from one man, and that's Curtis Wainwright.
I wanted to convey to the jury that this was a credibility trial of Curtis Wainwright.
On day two of the trial, convicted killer Curtis Wainwright is called to the stand.
Next witness.
And at first, Seavers gives off the impression of not having a care in the world, smiling and cracking jokes with his lawyer. But that will quickly change.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to give?
Wright is questioned by prosecutor Hameed Hunter.
The biggest moment in the trial was Mr. Wright taking the stand. These two men have been best friends most of their lives.
Mr. Wright, who killed Dr. Teresa Seavers?
Jimmy Rogers and I physically did it, but Mark Seavers was also involved in the planning.
Why did you do it?
I was asked to do it.
By whom?
Mr. Seavers.
Is Mr. Seavers in court today?
Yes, he is.
Can you please point to Mr. Seavers and identify him by an article of clothing?
He's the middle gentleman there on at the table. The darker colored jacket.
Well, I'm not a fan of Curtis Wright. He's a killer. He's an admitted killer. And so we went straight at him. There wasn't going to be any compromises for Mr. Wright.
Hunter confronts Wright about his earlier lies when he tried to pin all of the blame on Jimmy Ray Rogers.
Did you tell us the truth?
Not in the beginning.
Started out with a lie?
Well, it started out with the truth, but it got off in the middle, and then those lies were corrected. I told the truth before the end of that statement.
Wright testifies he and Seavers made the deal to kill Teresa at Wright's wedding in Missouri a few months earlier.
He told me that he and Teresa were having problems, marital problems. He told me that she was having an affair, and that they were having financial problems as well, considering bankruptcy.
Did he ask me to do anything?
He told me that really the only option that he had was for her to die. And he said that he needed to have her killed.
Wright says he received a $600 check from Seavers to cover expenses for driving to Florida, with the promise of much more to come.
He said that there was a lot of insurance, that him and the kids would be well taken care of, and that he had at least $100,000 to offer to have it done.
And then the jury hears Wright's chilling description of how Teresa Seavers was killed the night she returned home alone, just as he had testified earlier at the trial of Jimmy Ray Rogers.
The headlights would have been right on me. I jumped up and I followed her into the house.
And when she started to turn towards you, what did you do?
I hit her with the hammer.
Does she see you?
Yes, because I accidentally kicked the dog dish over. The dishes went flying everywhere. It made a huge noise. It startled her. I was afraid that if she turned around, she would scratch me or do something to leave evidence. I swung the hammer and I hit her.
Did you and Dr. Seavers ever make eye contact?
Yes.
How did she look when you made eye contact with her?
Surprised.
Did she fight?
Yeah.
You fought for her life?
Yeah. I never in a million years envisioned beating her to death with a hammer.
On day three of the trial, during cross-examination of Wright, Mark Seavers' lawyer tries to push a theory about Wright's interest in Mark Seavers that he thought would explain what happened.
Detective Leavitt asked you about your sexual preference, didn't he?
Yes.
Objection, relevance.
Sustained.
Detective Leavitt wanted to know if you had a sexual relationship with Mark Seavers, didn't you?
Objection, relevance.
Sustained.
The judge tells Mummert to move on.
That was a tough one because there was something there. There was this air of possessiveness or intimacy. And if Curtis can't have Mark, nobody can.
Mummert has his own theory about the case and about Curtis's motive.
My theory is that when Mark went to Curtis's wedding, that Curtis just had enough. Mark married a beautiful doctor. Mark had two beautiful girls. Mark lived in a nice home in Benita Springs, Florida. Why does Mark get to have it all? And I believe that that anger, as well as a possible, you know, sexual attraction to Mark, caused the basis for Curtis to finally say, no, I've had enough. I'm going to go down there. I'm going to kill Mark's wife.
Mummert has to change his tact, now challenging Wright about the money he claims Seavers promised him. Investigators had found cash in the house, so why didn't Seavers just tell him to take it?
You know that there was nearly $50,000 in that home, is that correct?
I found that out later, but no, I didn't know that.
So there was $50,000 when you went down to commit the murder, is that correct?
Objection.
I don't know.
Sustained.
Mr. Seavers never said, I have all this money, and I'm going to set it aside for you, and you just take it, correct?
Correct.
And then after the murder, you came down again for the funeral, is that correct?
Yes.
Having the mission completed, right?
Yes.
Did you ever get $50,000 in cash at that time?
No, our agreement was it would be paid after he got his life insurance payment.
I don't believe Mark ever gave the go-ahead. But Teresa was worth more alive than dead. Why would he want to give that up?
As Seavers watches his best friend testify, the smiles and jokes seem to be replaced by tears and grief. Is it authentic or a performance for the jury?
For us, it seemed that Mark Seavers was not the grieving husband, but just someone who could bring on tears when desired. And so we hoped that the jury would see those tears for what they were, not of those of a grieving husband, but those of a manipulator.
On day 9 of the trial, December 4th, 2019, both sides make closing arguments, starting with the prosecution.
The evidence has shown that Mark Seavers hired Curtis Wright, his best friend, to kill his wife, Dr. Teresa Seavers. An unconscionable act in light of that sacred contract. So Mr. Wright is a felon. He's an admitted liar. He's a killer. There's no reason why any reasonable person should believe a word he says. But he's corroborated by evidence. Mr. Wright says he came to Florida to kill Dr. Seavers with Jimmy Rogers. There's evidence of that, corroborative evidence. I want you to consider asking why. I want you to keep asking why. She's not a captain of industry. She's not a politician. She's a medical doctor and a mother of two and a wife. And she's dead.
Michael Mummert then addresses the jury, presenting his case in Mark Seavers' defense.
Good morning. You've now heard all the evidence. And one question, no one's answered. Why? Why? Why is Teresa Seavers dead? The best answer we can give you is she is dead because Curtis Wainwright killed her. And without Mr. Wright, there is no case. And the crime scene itself, those photos, they're hard to look at. And they're hard to look at because that crime scene is anger, and it's violence, and it's rage, and it's hate. It is not murder for money. Ultimately, the one question you all have to ask yourselves, do you trust Curtis Wainwright?
The jury begins its deliberations just before lunchtime.
You know, you always hope it'll be fast because of the anxiety and waiting for the verdict.
When the jury goes out, you just say, we did everything we could. We did everything that we reasonably could.
It's only 4 hours later when the judge calls everyone back into court.
I've been told we have a verdict. State's ready. Defense is ready. So either side need any time to talk to their sides or their parties because these things are tough and I'm not going to have any outbursts. We'll let the clerk publish the verdict.
In the Circuit Court of the 20th Judicial Circuit, in and for Lee County, Florida, criminal action. State of Florida versus Mark D. Seavers, case number 15CF673B. Verdict. We, the jury, find as follows as to the defendant in this case. Count one, first-degree murder. The defendant is guilty of first-degree murder. Conspiracy. The defendant is guilty of conspiracy. So say we all, December 4th, 2019, by the foreperson.
He broke down eventually there, but when that verdict was read, he was pretty stoic.
Now the question of how Mark Seavers should be punished.
My partner and I were going to have to sit down now and ask this jury to recommend a sentence of death for Mr. Seavers.
For a death sentence to be on the table, the jury would have to find at least one aggravating factor, and it has to be unanimous. In this case, they will consider whether the murder was committed for financial gain, in a cold, calculated manner, or both. The jury also has to consider what's called a victim impact statement from Teresa Seavers' mother, Mary Ann Groves, who is now allowed to speak openly in court.
And of course, the biggest loss falls upon her two daughters, whom Teresa loved with all her heart. These two girls have been robbed of their remarkable mother, their home, their pets, their possessions, their family and friends. Teresa will not be able to love and guide them. She won't be there when they graduate high school or when they need their mother to kiss away tears from their first heartbreak. We have lost our Teresa, the light of our lives, the star of our family, who loved us all so fiercely. It has been hard for all of us to go on with our daily lives. The void is unimaginable. She was our strength, our inspiration, and our caretaker.
When the jury returns after just 3 hours, it first addresses the question of whether the murder was committed for financial reasons.
The capital murder was committed for pecuniary gain? No.
Now the question of whether the murder was committed in a cold, calculated manner.
Yes. We, the jury, unanimously find that Mark Seavers should be sentenced to death? Yes.
But the judge still has the power to overrule the jury's death sentence. The court also hears about a letter from Seavers' eldest daughter asking that her father's life be spared.
The letter essentially said, in not so many words, while I don't want a relationship with my father, if I decide that I might at some time in the future, I can't have that if he is sentenced to death and taken from me.
And then, for the first time, the court hears from Mark Seavers, defiant and showing no signs of remorse.
Is it okay if I refer to my notes?
Yes, sir, absolutely.
Although a jury found me guilty, I am innocent of all charges.
as I've maintained since this heinous crime took place. I love my wife, Teresa, and our two daughters, Josie and Carmi, with all my heart. Our girls have tragically lost their mommy, and now they're about to lose their daddy as well. Therefore, I respectfully ask the court for life, as not to compound their loss and suffering. I am grateful, however, that the court can only determine my fate on earth while my soul is in God's hands, and God knows the truth. Although I cannot feel remorse for something I had absolutely nothing to do with, I am deeply saddened and forever heartbroken, to say the very least, that Teresa was taken from us.
On the other side of the courtroom, prosecutor Cynthia Ross remains unconvinced by Seavers' plea for leniency.
Mark Seavers was crying for Mark Seavers. He hadn't shed a single tear for Teresa Seavers at any time. The only tears Mark Seavers ever shed were for Mark Seavers.
Teresa is my soulmate. I will miss her and cherish her memories until we are reunited in heaven. Until then, I will fight this wrongful conviction until I am proven innocent and set free to rejoin my family.
Now Judge Bruce Kyle decides whether or not to overrule the jury's decision.
I will note for the record that his children do not want the death penalty imposed, and he was a hands-on devoted father, and he did help people who were in need.
But in the end, he sides with the jury.
A jury of 12 have found you guilty as charged, so you are guilty. And this is the order of the court that you be sentenced to death, sir.
You feel so terrible for the family. I feel so terrible for the girls because their father orphaned them.
Mark, even if you believe everything they said, did not commit an act of violence. Mark is the only person on Florida's death row right now who did not commit an act of violence.
To hear the judge say, death penalty, justice is served. He got exactly what he deserved. He got exactly what he deserved.
I judge people's actions. I don't judge people's souls. And if I'm wrong, hopefully God will have mercy on both of us.
Killer Cases, the podcast, is a production of the Law and Crime Network and Vault Studios. You can watch Killer Cases on the A&E Network and the True Crime Network. Refer to your local programming guide for full details. Brian Weiss, John Ford, and Will Johnson are executive producers with Vault Studios. Reed Redman and Will Johnson produced and edited the podcast. Killer Cases, the television series, is written and presented by me, Brian Ross, and produced and directed by Rhonda Schwartz. Executive producers are myself, Brian Ross, and Rhonda Schwartz with Ellsworth Productions, and Rachel Stockman and Dan Abrams with Law and Crime Productions. Also, thanks to producers Sam Kelly and Jennifer Tinter, and editors Danny Hilton and Nick Teodori. Killer Cases is produced in partnership with Cineflex Rights and True Crime Network. Thank you.